It's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It is Tuesday the 24th of June 2025. It's 4 minutes past nine and you're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show. And as usual, it's a packed 3 hours. What are we going to talk about? Well, of course it's Tuesday, so we've got Community Garda information for you. That's where we bring you the latest appeals and information from Ungada Síochána first here on the 9 till noon show. We're going to have reaction to the latest hurdle to be placed in front of the much needed A5 upgrade. What else is there? We're going to talk about what's happening in the Middle East. What a difference 24 hours makes. And of course, too, Donegal just have a 6-day turnaround. Is it 9 games in 12 weeks now they're being asked to play? Donegal have been drawn to play first in Croke Park next Saturday. It's fantastic we're in a quarter final, but an extra day's recovery would make an awful lot of sense for the Donegal team. The Donegal GEA did seek a Sunday tie. It wasn't awarded, and the game's only on GEA Plus. Now, of course, you can listen to us here in Highland, but you know, if you wanted to watch it on your free-to-air TV, you're not going to be able to, because it's on GEA Plus and it's on Saturday and it's a short turnaround, and there's no team played more games than Donegal in the Championship so far. So we'll have a chat about that. Anything you want to talk about, either on some of those topics or your own, 086 60 25000. Yeah, and what a difference 24 hours make. I mean, yesterday, just about this time, we were talking about how Donald Trump had, or I was, how Donald Trump had committed in the election to be a president of peace, and that he had thrown that all back into the face of his voters, and he had intervened and dragged America into another war. And now it appears that that war is over, because very late last night, at about 11 o'clock, it popped up on my phone from his Truth social media, because you have to source your news from lots of places, of course, that a ceasefire was being announced. So we had a situation where for the last 10, 11 days, Iran and Israel have been bombing the living daylights out of each other. America then decided to target three nuclear sites in Iran, and we all thought, right, what's going to happen here? And next thing you know, a ceasefire is announced. Now, it seems the Israelis reached out to Qatar saying that, look, we've achieved what we set out to do. Qatar contacted the Iranians, and the Iranians said, well, if they stop attacking us, we've no business attacking them. And America then, of course, has to have a role in that. And between the jigs and the reels, there's a ceasefire. And Iranian state media, and the reason I mention this now, because it's not in the papers, I think it made the Mirror, but that's about the height of it, because it all happened so late at night, and all the papers are talking about where things are going to go next, and here we are with a ceasefire. Iran, which is good, because there's people out there, you know, that it's like you hear another thing that's happening, and you wonder, well, what does this mean, and where's the world going? So anytime there is a breakthrough, albeit very far away, it is a bit of a relief. Already, by the way, because we mentioned the pressure on diesel, petrol and home heating oil prices, already crude oil, the raw product, has dropped significantly, because there's now, if the ceasefire holds, there's no great threat to supply lines. So that means that the 250, whatever it could have ended up heading towards, looks unlikely to happen now in the wake of this ceasefire. So that's how it would have primarily potentially affected us, right? But the cost of oil at the source is down. So it's a bit of good news. An Iranian state media outlet, SSN, or SNN, in fact, they reported that Iran has fired a last round of missiles towards Israel before a ceasefire comes into effect. Iran state TV also reported that a ceasefire has been imposed on Israel after waves of Iranian attacks. And the Israeli government, they say it agreed to the ceasefire proposals after achieving the objective of its attacks on Iran. According to the statement, Israel has removed Iran's dual immediate existential threat from nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles. It also says Israel has inflicted severe damage on the military leadership and destroyed dozens of central Iranian government targets. And of course, Iran can say that they attacked America, because they sent missiles towards an American base in Qatar. Israel's claiming victory. Iran is saying that Israel was forced to submit. And, you know, that's all just semantics, really. They can all claim a win. But effectively, it appears, if that ceasefire holds for 24 hours, that that war is over. The 12-day war, you could call it, I suppose. So, as I say, something a bit more positive to wake up to this morning. But going to the papers, and families of A5 victims will be heartbroken. We'll be talking about this, of course, later on in the show. This is the Irish Daily Mirror. Families of those killed and injured on the A5 will be heartbroken by a judgment quashing an executive decision to go ahead with an upgrade, the infrastructure minister has said. Liz Kimmins insisted she would not be giving up on plans to make the road safer, safer following the ruling at the High Court in Belfast yesterday. Ms Kimmins was in court as Mr Justice McAlander said the proposed $1.2 billion road upgrade breached Stormont's Climate Change Act. Speaking afterwards, the minister said it was an extremely disappointing day. She added, I want to start off by paying tribute to all the families who have lost loved ones on the A5. Now, I'm not sure if this forms part of the coverage or part of what people think, but, you know, you're going to have a significant piece of infrastructure that is required, and you're also going to have a group of individuals who are opposing that, and then the courts will decide. The one thing I think we should be able to take for granted is that the planning application, the process, the orders are so robust on behalf of a government that they are so robust that they can't be challenged by a group of landowners. And it appears that some basic stuff was overlooked here. It's not going ahead because it breached Stormont's Climate Change Act. I believe they didn't include it in their projections. And that's not good. You know, I think that's someone dropping the ball. That should have been so watertight that there could have been no legal grounds to oppose it. Such is the importance of the infrastructure. So maybe I'm far out here, and maybe it isn't or shouldn't be directed at the executive or the officials responsible for the planning and what have you of this road. But I don't believe it should be so easily challenged if the planning process is followed to the letter of the law. And it's robust and it complies with climate action plans, etc. But anyway, people who know more than me will be reacting to that. Potentially good news. You know, there is a bit of a frustration, and it's not quite like this, but there is this bit of a frustration, and we've heard it now from a couple of health ministers that hospitals run a little bit Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, and they're making great efforts, it seems, to try and change how hospitals run so that, you know, in terms of being admitted to the hospital but being discharged, if you're able to be discharged, happens 7 days a week smoothly. So we'll see if this makes any difference. It's in the Irish Independent. A breakthrough deal has been reached to reduce the hospital trolley crisis, free up beds and extend routine care for patients as thousands of healthcare staff look set to work over weekends. The agreement with healthcare unions will see senior consultants and, crucially, other staff, including social workers, administrative employees and therapists, rostered 5 over 7 days. It would mean hospitals would no longer be confined to providing routine care during weekdays and between office hours. The aim is to increase discharges of patients, avoid trolley gridlock after weekends, and hold more clinics, surgeries and diagnostic services over a longer week. Staff will initially be asked to volunteer for the new rosters, but those hired or promoted after December 2008 are likely to be told they are contractually obliged to change. A circular from HSE Chief People Officer Anne-Marie Howey said agreement has been reached with health service trade unions on arrangements to facilitate the introduction of extended working weeks in the HSE and HSE-funded agencies. So, I mean, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, that's not how we get sick. That's not how you can run hospitals to treat those who get sick. So we shall watch on and see how that improves things. Because you can see in the figures the problems at the weekends. Just interesting, if any of you are currently in the United States or have young people in the United States on visas or they intend to go, US visa applicants must disclose all social media. I mean, this is the great free speech country of the world looking to get in at your socials. But Irish students seeking US educational and exchange visas will be required to make their social media profiles public to allow officials to review their online activity, the US Embassy in Dublin has said. What do you think about this? In a statement yesterday, the embassy said the US State Department is committed to protecting our nation and our citizens by upholding the highest standards of national security and public safety through our visa process. A US visa is a privilege, not a right, it said. So what is your initial reaction to that? And let me flip it. So I suppose, you know, a lot of people, you can understand what they think of you. You can understand their motivations. You can understand their background from their social media. I mean, how long is it maybe before someone in this country says that if you're seeking asylum here or you're seeking to move here for work, that we kind of need to know what your attitude is to Western society, to Europe, to Ireland? Do you know, do you hold any bad feelings? Do you understand stuff about the country or what have you? I mean, I would say there are probably those in this country that would welcome this, or maybe not. What do you think? 086 60 25,000. I suppose, so in the first instance, do you believe the US is right to make sure it's screening people to ensure they're not a threat? And B, I suppose, who's going to be the first shock jock or politician to say we need to do this here to make sure that everybody's intentions who comes to Ireland are pure towards Ireland? Let me know, 086 60 25,000. Apparently there was no goodies, and I remember at the time when a government was being formed, and I asked about goodies and the costs of them, because I'm I'd be a very strong advocate, and I'm entitled to say this, that if you give your support to a government, whichever the government is, you should firstly say what you're getting in exchange for that. But you should also then, I think we should also know what the cost is to the taxpayer. So if someone from Cork supports the government, what are they getting for Cork and how much is it going to cost the state? Because then we can understand why maybe we're not getting something or how the whole process works. And I was told by, can't remember which politician, it certainly was someone very high up in government, that there were no goodies. Well, here we go. The Irish Daily Mail. Government backbenchers are irate that independents who voted against the coalition are set to be rewarded with constituency goodies in the National Development Plan. The Irish Daily Mail has learned of growing frustration among the Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael rank and file as NDP negotiations intensify, with all TDs anxious to see the needs of their constituents addressed. Many have voiced their discontent with the fact that Barry Hennehan, Gillian Toole and Danny Healy-Ray will have the ear of ministers and what might be perceived as a greater leverage in securing NDP commitments despite voting against the government in recent weeks. One Fianna Fáil TD said this can't be an a la carte arrangement where they support the government when it suits. They have the ear of ministers. They're getting more goodies than backbenchers, and they're apparently allowed to vote whichever way they want. They can't have it both ways. So listen, the obvious bit that everyone denied was that there were goodies going around. Now, I mean, would we mind if there was a independent or a smaller party that would support the government to fast track the Letterkenny Link Road? I think that would be welcomed. I don't think anyone would be critical of it. The Sun now, and the government will today move to ban trade between Ireland and occupied territories in Palestine. The Occupied Territories Bill was originally tabled by independent Senator Francis Black in 2018. It sought to stop trade between Ireland and illegally occupied parts of other countries, mainly aimed at Israel settlements in Palestine. However, successive governments blocked the legislation due to legal issues. Taoiseach Simon Harris will now table a watered-down version. The Israel Settlement Prohibition of Importation of Goods Bill at a meeting at Cabinet today. It doesn't include services, but apparently the government's open to it into the future. And finally, Micheál Martin has vowed that further legislation cracking down on vapes will be introduced to target flavoured and disposable products. He made the comments at the World Conference on Tobacco Control, which is taking place this week at the Dublin Convention Centre, under plans devised by former Health Minister Stephen Donnelly. A new licensing system for the retail sale of tobacco products and nicotine inhaling products such as e-cigs will be introduced in February 2026. This will enable retail outlets to obtain annual licenses to sell them. So we could see the law on a ban on disposable vapes aligning with Britain and Northern Ireland as early as next February. The government say in the Star today that they are committed to that. 086 60 25,000 if you want to give us a WhatsApp or text, or indeed send your WhatsApp voice notes or call us on 07491 25000. And we are going to get reaction now to the news that the A5 a ruling has found that the A5 cannot proceed as such. Let's see if I can go to Niall McKenna, chair of the Enough is Enough campaign group. Good morning, Niall. Are you there? Hello, Niall. Right, I'll come back to Niall in a moment. I think Councillor Joy Bird is there. Joy Beard. Good morning, Joy.
Good morning, Greg.
Thank you so much for joining us. And as I say, I'll get to Niall McKenna in a moment. You're also a member of the Northwest Regional Development Group. This is a major blow for anyone using the A5, not least us, as it's our main route, particularly, I suppose, in the north of the county, down to Dublin, etc. This is a big blow.
It definitely is, Greg. I think we were all waiting and anticipating anticipation of the word coming through yesterday that it has been given the go-ahead, but sadly that didn't happen. As you've mentioned there, it is the main route linking, you know, ourselves here in Donegal to Dublin and the rest of Ireland. We have to remember we have no rail, we have no motorways, and, you know, we've under-resourced local services. So the A5 was a vital link, and I'm hoping, you know, obviously that court ruling yesterday, we have to respect the courts, but I think there has to be a balance due to the safety issues on that road. You know, it has to be delivered, Greg. That's the long and the short of it. It's too dangerous. Like, we've had over 50 people since 2006, you know, have lost their lives on that road. And speaking to one of the families yesterday, they were absolutely devastated, Greg. You know, we can't allow this road not to continue. It's too important. Like, you know yourself, you've highlighted it, you know, about us having to travel for our healthcare. Certainly we should never have to travel for essential healthcare, but this is what we've got. And that road possibly would have made it a little easier for people, you know, again, for tourism as well, for people coming into Donegal. I don't need to tell anybody just how wonderful Donegal is, the most scenic, you know, regions in Ireland, I believe, and tourism as a major part of our economy. And this road plays a vital role in getting people to Donegal.
Yeah, I wonder how they'll overcome the problems here, because in his findings, the judge said that the road was not mentioned in Stormont's draft climate action plan published last week. And he said this was despite the fact that Northern Ireland might already experience difficulty staying within its carbon budget, which had been set in the plan. I mean, should we not have been able to be confident that the civil service, the government in Northern Ireland, could have foreseen this? I mean, this is kind of a seems like an obvious oversight, which is quite troubling. My eye keeps being drawn to this. How could they not have predicted this might happen?
Yeah, I agree, you know. I think that something should have been addressed there and then. So as this wouldn't have happened yesterday, you know. Obviously, it was a breach of the Northern Ireland Climate Change Act 2022. I think there was lack of sufficient information on different environmental impacts as well. And I think it was cited inadequate public documentation on carbon emissions and mitigation measures were what were cited as part of why it was what happened yesterday. But it's very important that we have to look forward now. We have to make sure that, you know, that the it moves forward now. The A5, you know, we've got the political will there. We've got the funding is there, which is a strange thing to have both, you know, working hand in hand. So now is the focus to resolving those courts' concerns and being in compliance with environmental and climate legislation, and finally get this work started, whatever it takes to get it done.
Yeah, Niall McKenna, chair of Enough is Enough campaign, is with us now. Niall, I mean, obviously everyone's incredibly disappointed by this decision. Where does it leave us?
Morning, Greg. Well, look, after yesterday was obviously a very disappointing day for our group and for the families of the victims of the A5 road. They're disheartened, obviously, at the moment, but they certainly not give up hope on the scheme progressing and progressing quickly.
Do you see any positives from the judgment yesterday?
Well, I suppose the only positive in it really was that, you know, obviously going through the application in so much detail and pointing out weaknesses in the in the application. He has now provided a roadmap for the scheme to go ahead. So if those issues can be addressed, whether that, you know, would be via the department or whether it would be through some have talked about emergency legislation at Stormont, then I think that the judge has provided that roadmap for the scheme to go ahead.
Do you think, though, that it's concerning that such an oversight from Stormont allowed this judgment to be found? I mean, surely whomever was responsible for this, be it elected reps or civil servants, this project not being included in a draft climate action plan published just last week, it seems at the very least a very basic oversight, but very significant.
I'd be more concerned, Greg, about the systemic failure over 20 years. You know, it's July 2007 since this scheme first got cross-party support and Stormont and First got given the go-ahead. Now, more importantly, since July 2007, 57 people have died in that road. And we would argue needlessly if the scheme had been delivered when it should have. So yesterday's decision is the third occasion that, you know, the judiciary here in the north, you know, has overturned a DFA application. You know, and there's something systemically wrong here in the north that allows or does not allow for these large capital projects to go ahead. You know, I think the overwhelming feeling of the families yesterday was, you know, the laws of the land are supposed to be there to serve the people. They're supposed to be there to protect the people. The judgment itself recognises that this scheme has huge societal benefits. And how can a legal system, how can the laws of the land thwart what the vast majority of the people want?
Something
systemically wrong.
Yeah, you referenced the judge's comments. He said the shortcomings and shortcuts in the decision-making highlighted in the judgment are capable of being remedied. Ministers should redouble their efforts to deal with the shortcomings so that sooner or later a new and safer A5 dual carriageway may come into operation and the long list of names of those who have perished on that road will not be added to. So he's put it back on the lap of Stormont effectively. The will is there, do you believe, too? Redouble efforts to overcome these shortcomings?
The will is most definitely there. It is one of the few schemes in the north that has had cross-party support since its inception. Quite a rarity. So the political will is there, you know, and the vast majority of the people in West Tyrone and further want this to go ahead. There's obviously a strong body of support for it, so we would expect to proceed.
Okay, fingers crossed. Hopefully this is just a blip. Thank you very much indeed, Niall McKenna, Chair of the Enough is Enough campaign. And I suppose, Councillor Beard, that if there is any additional pressure or support to come from the South, we hope that's forthcoming as well.
Oh, for sure. And I think there has already been that commitment, you know, to get people around the table, you know, to make sure that this moves forward. It's too vital to let this go. And I think everyone's on the same page. As I said, it's not very often we have the political will, but we certainly got that and the funding is in place. So look, we've just got to get this sorted now and get it moving forward, you know, before there's another tragedy on that road.
Unfortunately, though, we know that that probably won't be the case. Such is the frequency of tragedy. Thank you very much, Councillor Joy Beard there. George Mills is former member of the Irish Road Hauliers Association and I suppose knows firsthand how dangerous this road is. George, devastated by the decision, I'm sure.
Good morning, Sean, Greg, sorry, and thanks for having me on. Yes, I am absolutely devastated by this decision. I can't believe that it's been put off again indefinitely. We don't know when it will be resumed. I've been driving trucks on that road for 50 years, and it's totally not suitable for purpose. So I'm gutted that it's not going to be upgraded. It's years out of date.
And I mean, obviously we can talk about overcoming these shortcomings and make sure it goes ahead, but we've been at this crack for 20 years now. You know, what will be the next loophole or plot for that will be exploited to stop this road going ahead? I don't want to be pessimistic, but, you know, It seems a crazy oversight by Stormont not to include this in their climate action plan. Whether it should be in there or not is a, you know, whether that should exist or not, it's a different debate. But the bottom line is that that you know, that seemed pretty basic, a pretty basic mistake to me.
Yes, Greg, the volume's very bad on my phone here. Actually, I can hardly hear what you're saying, but I get some of it. And I agree that they didn't dot their I's or stroke their T's correctly. And that's why it was able to be successfully appealed yesterday. But that's, to me, a disgrace that just because of that, that road safety has taken second place to environmental concerns. Look, so I really, for Donegal, and the Shone in particular, and Donegal in general, the A5 is to us what the Panama Canal is to America. To get from one side of America to the other without being able to use the Panama Canal for ships would be out of the question. And it's the same for us in the Shone in particular, and Donegal in general. To get to our capital city, we have to use the A5. So it's our Panama Canal, and it's vitally important to us. And I do think that our own politicians don't push it hard enough, particularly maybe in Donegal. But I was impressed by Pat De Cope this morning, who was weighing into the debate and pushing it hard, because it concerns us, and we're putting money into it. And as I said about the Panama Canal, it was America built the Panama Canal. It might be in another country, but and they seem to have control over it, but I think it was American money that built it. So we're in a similar situation on a much smaller scale, of course. And as far as environmental concerns go, it seems that a lot of the emissions maybe for the environment, which we're told about, are coming from slurry and agriculture and so on, which I'm a farmer myself, and I have sympathy for farming. But that's a bigger issue in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, it is. I mean, but rather than getting bogged into that, I mean, the bottom line is that it wasn't included. It wasn't included in the Climate Action Plan. You know, whether or not it's farmers or roads or whatever that contribute to damage to the environment, the bottom line is this major piece of infrastructure was not part of the Stormont's Draft Climate Action Plan 2023 to 2027. I mean, that's a crazy oversight. Listen, thanks, George, for that. Councillor Paul Canning is chair of the A5 committee, and I'm sure, Paul, not that it's the biggest issue of the day, you'd be quick to point out that we in Donegal, be it the council, be it the chamber, be it the Derry chamber, you know, all singing off the one hymn sheet and really pushing to get this project over the line for all the reasons that are so obvious.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And good morning to you, and good morning to your listeners. But we are meeting as the A5 into committee. We are meeting with the Minister Liz Cummins today. She's the Minister for Infrastructure. We're meeting her in Stormont at 2:00 today. The situation with it, just to give you, we have a committee, and it's made up of the five councils. It's made up of the Donegal, Derry, Stavan, Mid Ulster, Fermanagh, Omagh, and Monaghan, and we have four councillors, and then we have the roads official as well, giving us updates all the time. But we had sought this meeting prior to the decision by the courts, and in fairness to the minister, she has given us a meeting today. So we will be meeting with her, and we will be stressing our concerns, and hopefully she has an update for us in relation to the next steps, because there's no point in crying over spilt milk. I'll give you a better update maybe tomorrow, what steps were taken, you know.
But the judge has put the ball back in Stormont's court, and in fairness, Stormont really in this instance is the figurehead of all of us here. He said that you know, he's had to reject it on the base on the grounds that he did, but he has said, and who knows better than he is, he's went through all of this, that the shortcomings can be overcome. So it'll be very interesting to see what Liz Cummins says to you about as to how they are going to overcome these shortcomings as they're described by the judge.
Yeah, well, you see, it's a situation, and at times we're all caught up in legislation, and unfortunately, and the judge's hands were tied because he's a legislator for the legislation, and he can't go different. It's a wee bit like Bord Pleanála. They can't, if it's there, it's there, and that's it. And the problem is, when you have an act that was changed in 2022, this A5 has been going on for 20 years. So there's probably items in there that didn't meet the 2022 Act or the legislation. So in relation to the climate change in particular, we have change of emissions, etc., because we're trying to meet targets of 2030, 2040. So those targets have been updated and upgraded. And in the middle of it all, our A5 plan, process, whatever, is probably caught offside insofar as it hasn't referenced the new Act, which couldn't at the time that you were doing the actual assessment. So if you go out to do an assessment, you can only do the assessment on what is happening today that you're doing the assessment. So I think that, now I'm only preempting that, but I, from my own experience, these are the things that come back to bite us, and it's red tape, but the judge cannot say, well, if spots and maybes, he has to go by what's in front of him and what's in black and white. So I'm hoping that Liz Cummins tells us today that her, the civil servants, the teams, the professionals that's involved, says, listen, this is something that we just have to go back in through the system.
I still can't get over the fact that people responsible for all of this did not believe that this development should have been in a climate action plan. But I take your point, and we might check in with you, Paul, tomorrow, actually, just to see how that meeting went. Okay, thanks so much. Yeah. Councillor Paul Canning, Chair of the A5 Committee, and actually just been handed the note, brief note, Senator Noel Blaney, member of the Good Friday Agreement. And I think myself and yourself might be somewhat on the same page in relation to this, that this shouldn't really, the judge shouldn't have been able to identify this as the latest stumbling block for this road project. That's your feelings, is it?
Well, that's part of some of my feeling. I don't think he needed to stop the project on the back of it, because this is a rolling process, as Paul has somewhat outlined there, in relation to climate change. He could have made an order that the scheme would comply with any new legislation that's there or will be in existence during the lifetime of the project. I don't think it's sufficient. You know, he never took into consideration the greenhouse gas emissions that people suffer on a daily basis going through Oma, where traffic's sitting for half hour and beyond on the way into it. He never took into consideration those that had to leave this region because of no jobs, because of the poor infrastructure coming into the area. And also, the oral hearing that was actually held in Omagh, Greg, where emergency services went down and made the case for the road. There's many factors that he hasn't considered here. I wonder how much pressure the judge was under, and maybe it was wrong for one judge to make the case. But there is an opportunity for this to be appealed, and let's not forget that. The one point I want to make strongly here, I've been fighting this campaign since the first National Development Plan was approved in the South in 2000, when that was left out, because there was no real links or collaboration with politicians in Northern Ireland or the Assembly. I remember going to several deputations to Bertie Ahern back in that time in 2000. Traffic count at Oma on the halfway point of the A5 was actually the same as Galway, Dublin, who at that stage didn't have a motorway either. And look how much they have progressed in the meantime, and how much we haven't. And then you take a look at the A6, which serves East Tyrone. East Tyrone is now, I suppose, nearly the hub for Northern Ireland for exports, all the manufacturing businesses that's there because of the new roadway that's there. And, you know, if we go back to 2016 when funding was in place, and I remember Pierre Stordy and Pat McLaughlin telling me in one of your shows in 2015, don't worry now, Conor Murphy has this. They pulled in the executive in 2016 and we lost all the funding and we lost the project. And now we're sitting with an incompetent minister and a department who couldn't make the scheme comply with their own legislation. Now, if Sinn Féin were on the other side of the counter here, they would actually be calling for a head to roll. And I don't hear them this morning. And I think there is a lot of incompetence in relation to this project.
Why do you believe her head should roll, Niall?
There has been a trailing of the legs in relation to that department over the last number of years in relation to this project. Granted, we got it over the line last year, but by God, it was in hard work to get it passed. I don't believe that it's in Sinn Féin's interest to have the project go ahead. They'll tell you otherwise, etc.
So you're implying that I mean, obviously, we can go by what the judge said and the holes that the judge pointed out. He says they can be overcome. But explain to me what you believe the process was. Like, do you believe that, are you suggesting that Sinn Féin purposely have done something to prevent this going ahead?
I think there's been a dragging of the feet in relation to the scheme for quite a number of years now, and mostly it's been a Sinn Féin minister in the department. It's ongoing, and it's hard work to get anything moved in relation to the A5. And I don't believe that's happening by chance.
So are you saying something as basic as this major road infrastructure not being included in a climate action plan? You're not suggesting that was done on purpose, are you?
I'm saying that there's a dragging of the heels, a dragging of the feet. Like, this happened in any other jurisdiction, Greg. There would be calls for a minister to roll, and the incompetence would be called out. But there seems to be a fear to say anything when it comes to the likes of Sinn Féin in Northern Ireland. There is a level of incompetence here. When a minister can't have a scheme in line with their own legislation as passed in their own legislature, it's incompetence of the highest order. The minister should have been on top of this, or officials should have been on top of this. And it's not even just in relation to that. You take the likes of Lochney, you have similar issues. We have a mega scheme now in the south, but there's plenty of houses in Derry and Tyrone and Fermanagh, and nobody's calling for them. There is a dragging of the feet in relation to doing the necessary work for the people of Northern Ireland by their politicians.
But I just would have thought that the Attorney General or equivalent, that someone at some point should have spotted the fact that this project being not included in a major plan, and it is the biggest project in Northern Ireland, that was a potential for it being stalled once again. Lots of questions. Thank you very much indeed, Senator Niall Blaney, member of the Good Friday Agreement. The situation in the Middle East is moving incredibly rapidly. Israel's defense minister has accused Iran of violating the ceasefire just 2 hours after agreeing to the deal brokered by Donald Trump and Qatar. Israel has vowed to respond forcibly to Iran's violation of the ceasefire. Iran claims that it hasn't breached the ceasefire. Dr. Vincent Durack is Associate Professor in Middle East Politics at UCD, and delighted to welcome him onto the show. Good morning, Doctor. Thanks so much for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Nice to be with you.
Vincent, things are moving so quickly. I mean, we invited you on initially, I think, just to talk about where we go next. Since then, we've had a ceasefire. And even since then, in the last, half an hour, we've had accusations that this ceasefire has been breached. How does one read the situation?
With enormous difficulty, I think, as you've just pointed out, it really is moving very quickly. The ceasefire, I think, caught everyone by surprise. But then again, just about everything that's happened over the last 12 days has caught everybody by surprise. It's a little bit difficult to know quite what the arrangement was that Trump claims to have made with the Iranians and the Israelis. It's difficult to know why, if they actually did agree a ceasefire, why Iran would launch a single missile towards Haifa, which I think is the target, we are told. If it's a concerted attempt to break the ceasefire, then everything's up for grabs. If it's, if it's a question of miscommunication, chain of command issues, who knows? then it may simply be a hiccup, albeit a potentially violent one, if the Israelis respond by attacking Tehran, which is precisely what they've said they will do.
Israel were open to this, and I think it was they that reached out to Qatar initially to say that, you know, we're prepared to end this now because we've achieved our stated objectives. What were Israel's objectives in the last...
That's a great question. What their objectives were seem to have shifted a little, and again, that's not unique in terms of the various conflicts in which Israel has been embroiled over the last 2.5 years, nearly 3 years now. Ostensibly, this was about putting an end to Iran's nuclear capability. And the assertion that they've done so is clearly fraught, because there are very many people who have doubts about the extent of the damage that has been done to that nuclear capability. And, you know, I'm no nuclear scientist, but anybody who does any reading on this can see, excuse me, that there are questions about, for instance, the location of significant quantities of enriched uranium, which is central to the production of any nuclear weapon. There are questions around whether or not Iran has secret sites of which we do not know. And clearly, since this began, even though Iran is a signatory to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, nobody has gotten into Iran to see exactly what's been going on. And those who do know about these things are sceptical to varying extents regarding the extent to which the nuclear capability of Iran has been completely eliminated, as some claim was the Israeli
objective. Well, if I had a block of gold and I had it sitting on the coffee table in my front room, and I knew weeks and weeks in advance that burglars were going to come and take my block of gold, I am not going to leave it there. I mean, that for us to be expected to buy that we can't be so naive, and certainly the Iranians aren't. And you know how the strength of any bomb they're able to create depends on the level of enrichment of the uranium, and we're told that even uranium enriched at 60%, which they have, would be capable of making a Hiroshima type bomb. So it's very hard for us to be expected to swallow that the United States and Israel, 2 weeks from this bomb being made, as if someone is just waiting to plug in the power pack, that all has been alleviated by the last number of days and the actions by the US.
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. And that's precisely what a lot of people are saying. And in addition, there seems to be very clear satellite evidence of, you know, trucks being loaded at the now incredibly well-known Fordow plant, you know, of which nobody knew anything a few weeks ago. There is undoubtedly a great deal of reason to believe, exactly as you said, that the Iranians anticipated attacks. They've been threatened with this for a long, long time. The likelihood in turn that they concentrated all of their relevant resources in three different locations is pretty minimal. They've been penetrated by Israeli and American intelligence in all sorts of ways. That is all the more reason why you would disperse the resources available to you.
And Vladimir Putin, though not widely reported, has stated quite clearly that their capabilities have barely been damaged in this latest round of attacks. So I asked you why Israel would go with a ceasefire. Why would Iran?
Well, Iran would go with a ceasefire simply because they're incurring a great deal of damage, without a shadow of a doubt. And for the Iranian regime, the first and foremost objective is survival. Everything, we're not just talking about nuclear capability, but that obviously is part of the picture. Everything pretty much that they've done since 1979 has been targeted at maintaining status quo maintenance. And that has involved a great deal of pragmatism in contrast to some of the fiery rhetoric. Undoubtedly, in turn, this is a very nasty regime. It certainly has created a great deal of trouble in the region, but they are capable of being incredibly pragmatic in pursuit of that key objective. And to some extent, for the Iranian regime, simply to be standing up in the context of an onslaught from the world's greatest superpower and the strongest military force in the region is a success of a kind.
Donald Trump is playing extremely high-stakes stuff here with his, even his overnight declarations, because if this ceasefire is breached, it sort of undermines his position as a broker, but B, too, there comes a point then whereby he has to sort of decide what to do next, you know, to flex the muscles or what have you, because he can't be seen to have failed in this. That being said, he kind of turned his back and walked away on the Ukraine-Russia situation. So who's to say he might not do the same? I suspect he won't turn his back on Israel, however.
Yeah, the difference here, of course, is that unlike Ukraine, the US was all in after an initial period of hesitation following the first Israeli attacks on Iran. So there is, exactly as you say, there's a great deal of prestige, if you like, without trivializing it, attached to how this unravels one way or another for Trump. And the big question is, if the ceasefire doesn't hold, what exactly is the US about? Launching more attacks on Iran, they can do, obviously. Between the two countries' military apparatuses, they can fly above Iran, it seems, with, you know, abandon. But what the end game is another matter, and that then brings us into that whole murky set of questions about whether or not Trump or anybody else really wants to see a change of regime in Tehran. And even if they did want to see it, are they capable of bringing it about? And could they live with the consequences?
So many questions, even just around the level of orchestration, you know, how, you know, the attack on US bases in Qatar, that they were cleared, there was warning. How much of that was for Iran to say, look, we've responded, we're not weak, and now we'll go for peace? It's remarkable to see it play out, to play out live, and to sort of feel like you have an insight into what's happening in the background and not waiting 30 years for a memoir. Dr. Vincent Durack, thank you so much for your expertise. I appreciate it.
No problem. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Okay, take care. He's Associate Professor in Middle East Politics at UCD. All right, coming up after the news at 10, we have Community Guard information. And of course, there's so much more coming up on the 9 till noon show. We'll also be discussing Donegal's quick turnaround to play Monaghan next Saturday.